The sea is rising.
Rising sea levels.
Rising seas due to climate change.
The rise in sea level.
Brought to the surface the issue of rising sea levels.
Scientists project that the level of the water in the San Francisco Bay will rise 3 feet by the end of this century. That's a conservative estimate. Storm surges and extremely high tides could bring that number up to 8 feet. This encroaching water poses a threat to existing developments and to future ones. In its latest investigation, the San Francisco Public Press examined the plans for more than $21 billion worth of incoming development around the bay. They wanted to find out whether cities are thinking about these rising tides when approving the housing, office complexes, and stadiums coming to a waterfront near you. San Francisco Public Press reporter Kevin Stark led the investigation. He sat down with KALW's Audrey Dilling to share his findings.
How did we arrive at a situation where there are buildings being built in an area that might be underwater?
Yeah.
Whose fault is
that? That's a great question. And there's a lot of nuance to that because there are plans in place, but there's not a bay-wide solution. Well, let's give an example here. So let's say that we, you know, hypothetically built a wall around San Francisco. San Francisco would be safe, but then that water is still going to go somewhere. So we're effectively pushing it off into another area. So if the new developments are all protected, well, that's great, but that's still not a solution for the region, and it effectively pushes water into other places. So it's a puzzle piece approach around the bay. It's not a strategy for really protecting the area.
Is anyone poised to step in and be that leader for the area? Is there an agency out there?
I think the Bay Conservation Development Commission would be that agency. However, their mandate is only for 100 feet within the shoreline, and they don't have the capacity to fully reject projects. They have the capacity to ask for developers to take into account some type of consensus-based science. So another thing that you're seeing is developments around the bay are having different strategies for sea level rise, maybe looking at different years or different projections. And again, it's this sort of patchwork quilt of protection where some areas, some projects are, you know, very, very forward thinking and looking out to the year 2100, and other projects are saying, you know, we don't think we're going to be impacted.
And what do you think we need? I mean, what would that regulation look like on a bay-wide level? Or
I'll give you what I've heard from sources and from what people have told me, which is that we need a region-wide strategy, and we need to be adaptive so that as the science gets more refined and defined, we can adapt to that. And then we also need to realize that this is not a problem that ends in the year 2100. So if we're, you know, building our city based on that projection, it's only going to accelerate beyond that. So it in some ways needs to be sort of a change of consciousness, because we have a compartmentalization around climate change. It's something that we intellectually understand, but it's very difficult to tangibly really understand within our own day-to-day and within our own planning. So, you know, one facet of a city government could be really engaged around sea level rise, and then another facet of a city government could really be concerned with, you know, we need to get houses for our expanding population, and also create some space for these new businesses that are coming in.
Right. I mean, many cities in the Bay Area are suffering a huge shortage of land. I mean, is this land not usable, or is there a safe way to go about building developments on this land?
That is an exceedingly complex question. You know, what I would say is, well, let's take a look at San Francisco. This is sort of the last area of undeveloped land. And we're in kind of a unique position because a lot of these places, Treasure Island, you know, Mission Bay, they were federal land. They were, you know, industry land, and then now have been turned over to the city. And so it's this unique opportunity to really create a new neighborhoods for our city. The flip side to that is a lot of the land is landfill, and originally was part of the bay. And, you know, one of the ironies of sea level rise, which has been pointed out to me by a lot of sources, is, you know, the water's going to go back to its original. We have filled the bay in to a third of its original size, and with sea level rise, it's going to return to that, except for now we have cities in all of these places.
That's Kevin Stark, lead reporter on the San Francisco Public Press report on sea level rise and development. That report is in the summer issue of the Public Press, which is out in print and online now. You said that it was $21 billion worth of development that's out there. Whose money is that? That's developer money?
That's an interesting question. The developers are funding the projects, but you look at, let's take a project like Treasure Island, for example. You know, the developers have gotten the insurance money and they've gotten the loans to do the project. They're funding the adaptation work through a Belarus tax, which is essentially a tax that if you buy property in Treasure Island that you're agreeing to pay, that first goes to paying the developer back for the money that it put up for setting the buildings back, raising the grade, for compacting the land, because that land is fill and it needs to be settled before we can build on it. Otherwise, it could turn into kind of a soup if there was ever an earthquake. So that the Belarus tax first goes to paying back the developer, and then afterwards goes into a fund that would in the future be used to pay for increasing the size of the levee or some other technological fix as sea level rise accelerates. In a lot of ways, cities need developers to pay for adaptation strategies, because our taxes are not designed to build, you know, full seawalls around the city. We really need development to come in to get the insurance money and to get the loans in order to have a solution for sea level rise. So it creates this weird triangle where, you know, cities want to be talking about sea level rise because this is an issue that is paramount to the future of their shorelines and is really happening right now because there's so much development and they need developers, but you can't talk about sea level rise too much because it could scare away development or scare away the financing for these projects. So it creates this really complicated situation. And then if you're talking about politicians, their time frame is probably even shorter than that of a developer, because they're going on election cycles and their citizens are really concerned about housing and they're really concerned about things that are impacting them on the day to day. So it creates this institutional inertia.
Was there an element, did you discover that the cities were kind of, some cities, maybe it was San Francisco, were kind of trusting the developers to sort of self-report whether it was a reasonable project that they were developing?
Yeah, well, I think that's the issue with this issue with the mandate of the Bay Conservation and Development Commission, because they are only requiring developers to acknowledge that sea level rise is happening and use actionable science in their plans. And it is a back and forth that they do with developers, but in many ways it's up. The environmental impact report is written by the developer to be analyzed by cities and by regulators. And in San Francisco, there is absolutely no regulation for private development and sea level rise. So you talk to the developers and they say, you know, there really should be, because we need to know what to plan for. And I think that's an interesting thing. It's like, what they'll come in and they'll say, what are the numbers to plan for?